I have a brand new podcast called Stop Being Perfect that is basically dedicated to life after HA. I wanted to make a separate show because you're probably like, why wouldn't I just talk about that on this show? I really want the HA podcast to be about, you know, women in recovery, getting through this phase. We'll touch on life after, but I think sometimes it can be confusing and challenging for women to be able to separate the now from the future. So I wanted to create a show that talks about all the types of things that are going on in your life and our life and my life after HA. It could be things from getting back into exercise and sport and athletic endeavors all the way through to parenting, because a bunch of you guys are doing this to get pregnant, right? Parenting, postpartum, co-parenting, all kinds of subjects, including business, entrepreneur, us, maybe me and Ashley talking about the HA society and how we got started and how we built that business. So many topics that just don't feel 100% right for this show, but feel 100% right for you guys at a certain stage of your recovery. So go check it out. It doesn't matter to me what stage you're in recovery if you check it out, but just know that they're separate for a reason. And I want to encourage you guys to keep going down this path of taking radical action for yourself and not focusing on being so perfect all the time. Because I promise you, you achieve more and better and bigger and greater things when you actually take your foot off the gas a little bit. So that's Stop Being Perfect with Danny Sheriff. I'll put a link for you guys in the notes of the most recent shows. And I cannot wait to see you guys over there. Welcome to the Hypothalamic Amenorrhea Podcast. I'm Danny Sheriff, your host, certified fertility awareness practitioner, functional nutrition counselor, and founder of the HA Society, and of course, an HA recovery coach who has walked where you currently are walking. This is the place to come if you care about getting your period regularly. This podcast aims to educate, inform, and keep you motivated on your period and HA recovery track. So let's dive in. But last thing, nothing on the show should be taken as medical advice, so please seek the advice of your physician. Hey guys, welcome back to the HA podcast. I am bringing you guys a recovery story today. Every now and then I chat with someone like through email or through Instagram or something that I didn't like meet really on their journey, but somehow we talk. And I'll be like, do you want to come on the show? Because I think it's great for everyone to get all kinds of diverse stories. And that is how this show originally began. That's how this show originally began. So I don't want to get too far away from it. I want to keep bringing people on. So I am bringing Olivia on today. She is based in Kansas. I know nothing else really. I mean, we talked a bit in email. I got a bit of context, but like, I really don't know her story, do I? So I'm gonna get her to introduce herself and kind of tell us where everything begins. So welcome to the show, Olivia. Tell us about yourself. Who are you?
Thanks, Danny, for having me. So I'm Olivia. I am currently studying biology. Hopefully one day going to graduate with a PhD, but we shall see. Okay. That's what I'm doing currently. I live in the Kansas City area. Got a husband, got my parents and two sisters that live close by. That's just a little bit about me. Should I go ahead and just
please go? Do. Yeah. Tell us. So what happened? Where does the story begin for you?
Yeah. So, I've probably dealt with HA specifically since I was about 14. To kind of go way, way back into childhood. I have always been kind of a very particular person, or so I've been told. I remember when I was like in preschool, I had a lot of little tendencies that I think looking back probably could have trended towards like OCD had they not been corrected. Like I remember looking at a piece of paper and I would have like, I would draw like five little dots or hearts or whatever. And for some reason, like I would keep counting them. Or I would, you know, get a pair of socks to go like play or go to school or something. And I would always ask my mom, like every single day, hey, does this sock go on the right foot? And I'd be so like concerned that I wasn't doing it right. But I kind of grew out of that. Definitely do not have OCD. But I've always just had these particularities. And I think another important thing to know is I've always had a bit of difficulty approaching anyone to tell them that something is wrong. So I remember also when I was a kid, like going into my parents' bedroom at night, like if I had been sick or something, and for no reason. Like my parents were super great, super inquisitive. In fact, my mom did a lot of work trying to draw things out of me. But I would go up to their bed and I would just like have this big grin of like awkwardness on my face because I was so uncomfortable and being like, hey, like I'm sick or whatever. So that'll be important for later. But in elementary school, things were great. Middle school, things were pretty great. I think in middle school, that's kind of when I kind of became aware of body image. But again, not like any sort of positive or negative way, just pretty ambivalent. Like, my dad's side of the family is made up of like super thin people. And I definitely inherited a lot of that genetic background. And so growing up, I'd always hear like, oh my gosh, you're so skinny. Ha. And again, didn't really think anything of it. Although I knew it was probably a good thing just based on what pe how people would say it, right? But I do remember this one time in middle school, which in the moment I didn't really think it affected me, but I still have the memory, so clearly it did a little bit. But I was in the bathroom and this other girl was with me and we were changing into our PE uniforms. And she had made some comment. Don't know why she said something about my body like I was fat. And I knew I was not. And I was like, okay, what is she talking about? And kind of left there being like, I don't know why she said that, but whatever, I'll let it roll off my shoulders. But I did keep thinking about it. And I wouldn't necessarily say that's where problems happened. Like I went through that year, went through eighth grade, totally fine. And then after eighth grade, I changed schools. So starting my freshman year of high school at just our big local public school. Didn't really know anyone except for one person, and we weren't like close friends. And so every year, the freshman class had to do their obligatory year of PE or physical education, and then one quarter out of that whole year was a health class. And so this is kind of where things spiraled. Health class, it wasn't great. It was kind of boring. And it was during the time, too, where there was this big political campaign to make like school lunches super healthy, quote unquote healthy. So, like, replace all of the whole milk with 1% milk, or replace all the salad dressing with low fat dressing.
If you think about it too much, you'll just get mad.
And so for one of our units in health class, my teacher gave us all like a chart with every day of the week and categories for breakfast, lunch, dinner, snack. And she said, okay, so for this next week, you're going to write down everything that you eat. And I don't really think there was a calorie component. I'm really having trouble remembering that. But it was definitely like track it. And so, of course, being kind of like the perfectionist academic that I was, I would think about what I'd eaten that day and I wrote it down. And I would look at it and be like, oh, well, I know what the objective of this assignment is. It's to see if we're meeting all the food groups or if we're eating healthy. and I want to make sure that I do a good job and I eat healthy. And so I was a little more calculated that week of just like what I was eating, so then I could like write it down and be super proud. And then I never really stopped after that. So in addition, we had to calculate our BMI one day based off like calculator or whatever, just to see. So like, everyone, especially like girls in this like really tenuous time of just puberty, body changing, whatever, like we had to look at our BMIs, and like me and my friends looked at each other's, and yeah, not really a lot of stuff that maybe a 14-year-old
Okay, like
needs to be thinking about.
what, no, I can't even imagine what benefit that's bringing. And in their head, you
No.
know what, they're thinking, they're thinking like knowledge is power, or like,
Oh, of
these
course.
people, but like most of you were probably fine.
Oh, and I should also mention, in that health class, we watched a couple of documentaries about how like red meat is super bad and you'll get cancer if you eat it. It was awful.
How
So,
old are you? Sorry. How
oh
long ago were
yeah,
you in
I'm
school?
25. So this
Yeah,
was
okay.
10 years ago. Yeah. So I'm currently 25. Yeah. Also, sorry, this is kind of jumbled, but as a freshman in high school, I actually had never had my period, which was kind of odd. And my
And
parents were kind of,
freshman is
so
like the
freshman,
first
I
year
would
of
be
high
like four,
school.
yeah, first year of high school. So I was 14,
Okay.
which is not like alarmingly late, but it's definitely a little like eyebrow raising, like,
You're
oh.
like on the other side of the bell curve at this point.
Yes. And I do remember thinking, I was like, did I imagine that this is a thing? Like, I remember going to a class when I was like 9 years old that this was a thing, but it's never had it happen to me, so must not be a thing. I don't know. So this is all kind of conglomerating into freshman year between health class and probably June of 2014. So this is a period of about like 8 months, I'd say. Kind of fuzzy, but there was a lot of restriction on my part, really high control. Like, I think it fall more under orthorexia. So there were very particular foods that I would eat because I had calculated them. I was a master Googler. I could look up any nutrition label, any restaurant menu. I did really good. I like started eating more vegetables than I ever had. And I was praised all the time for eating so healthy. I got really creative one morning for breakfast where I replaced my oatmeal because we had ran out of oatmeal with quinoa, and I thought it was going to be a fine substitute. Awful mistake. But
Ew.
it was very gross. I actually threw it away, and I never throw away food. But it was behavior coming out of a place of like desperation.
You're like
Because
running out of ways to eat less. Like,
right. And there's no way I'm gonna just like eat a bagel. No, absolutely not.
no.
So I won't go through every single little detail, but my mom actually, and I think my dad too, but my mom had noticed that I had lost a lot of weight because now we had gone through the winter and she had noticed my jeans were pretty not full anymore. Like the clothes I was wearing were not fitting my body well. And so this is where it gets, this is where the lack of vulnerability on my part comes, because she would ask me like, is everything okay? Are you trying to lose weight? And I would just deny. I would deny. I would deny. We went to a doctor, and if they asked me those questions, I would deny it. And so I think my mom kind of knew, but she always sides with her daughters. And so we went to the doctor, and at this point, obviously, I'd still not had a period. Had a few doctor's appointments in that time. And do you Do you like when we say numbers or no?
So I'm open to numbers, so thanks for the heads up. If anyone wants to skip the next 30 to 60 seconds, do so. But I think numbers are helpful for people to see themselves in it. And it's like always a good opportunity to do a heads up. Sometimes when you have an ED background, which is not everyone, which is not everyone, which is why I see for everyone else who it's helpful for, but sometimes we hear it and it's triggering because, oh my gosh, she's thinner than me or something. And it's like, you're not hearing us. What we're saying is this was too small. Okay. So if this is you and you're sitting there being like, I'm 10 pounds heavier than ever, and you are around Olivia's numbers, like, remove the delulu and bring in the clarity. So go ahead.
So at that time in high school, I was probably 5 foot 6 inches. And June of 2024, I was 88 pounds. So quite skin and bone. And yet I knew that I was losing weight and I knew I was thin, but only until I saw pictures of myself, like pictures, not in real life, did I realize, like, oh wow, like I look unwell. And in fact, I cannot look at pictures of myself from that time in high school because it is just so, like, there's a lot of, as you say, delulu in that brain that's pictured, right? So on June, I know the exact date. So June 3rd, 2014, had a doctor's visit. They, took my weight, took my blood pressure, heart rate, sent us home. And then I remember, like, getting home, getting some lunch, going to my bedroom, just chilling out. I was going to go to volleyball practice that evening, and my mom gets a phone call from the doctor, and she comes into my bedroom and says, "We have to go to the emergency room." And I said, I just kind of looked at her and I was like, "Oh crud, like things have crashed." And she's like, "Your blood pressure and heart rate are too low and they're really worried about you." And so I was like, okay. My blood pressure was like 80 over 55 and my heart rate was like 50 something. So super bad. So waited in the emergency room at a children's hospital here in Kansas City, and they did a lot of, like, intake paperwork. And I actually got access to all those records in preparation for this. Just, I mean, actually in preparation for recovery, in preparation for recovery, which was a huge motivator to recover. But as I was reading the patient notes and, like, what nurses are typing as patient is talking to them, it's just all like patient denies not trying to lose weight, but, like, you can tell, like, they don't believe patient, but patient denies. And so, they're reading all of this and I think I'm keeping it like a straight face, whatever.
How interesting, where you're just like completely this, they're reading you like a book because they
they're
see it
reading
all
me
the
like a
time,
book.
which is so sad, but yeah.
And God love my mother. She stayed with me that entire, like, emergency visit. She stayed with me. I was admitted, and I stayed at that hospital for like 5 to 6 days. And the goal was, okay, we need to get this girl, like, we need to make sure all of her blood work is stable. We don't know what's happening. We need to make sure that she is willing to eat. We need to make sure that she's not doing anything to, like, expel her food, which I was not. And in fact, like, the thought of even doing that to myself scares me beyond belief. But in that time, like, it was definitely a wake-up call, and some sort of switch flipped in my brain. And I was like, okay, I know that this was a bad thing, and as I was doing it, I knew, like, this is unhealthy, but I could not fight, like, the temptation to keep going until that, where there was a total mind flip. Like, in that hospital stay, what they would do is basically Just like you shouldn't give a person who has eaten for such a long time like this massive meal, or else it's just gonna like mess them up. So what they did was, every day they would increase the amount of food I was given. So every meal I had, and then every day maybe there'd be an extra snack. And I had to eat everything that was given to me under 30 minutes, and a nurse had to be in my room 24/7, watch me. Whenever I used the restroom, I wasn't allowed to shut the door. I had to keep it like semi-open so they could monitor. And that included like using the restroom, showering. I was allowed to watch TV, but if a commercial came on that had food on it, I had to turn the TV off. And I wasn't allowed to watch any shows that were about food or any like cooking shows. So, highly controlled environment. I did not like it, but I was very cooperative because I was like, okay, like I realize this is a problem and I want to get out of here. So that's kind of, after that hospital stay, I started seeing a dietitian. So which that's different than a nutritionist in that a dietitian also has some sort of like counseling background. And so she helped me not only monitor my diet and like add things to my diet that I hadn't been originally, but she also kind of walked me through the feelings associated with just weight gain or body image or fear of food or anything like that. And I think she's still practicing today. So she was really excellent and got me up to eventually a healthy body weight. I probably gained, I mean, I don't know. I gained a significant amount of weight in that time. And so that took probably all of high school to achieve. And also in this time, I should mention that before I was hospitalized, I was actually diagnosed with hypothyroidism, Hashimoto's. So it was this autoimmune disorder. So in that time of weight gain, I was also managing that and getting used to having to take thyroid replacement every day. In the meantime, I gained the weight, but still no period. So we saw some endocrinologists at the same children's hospital. And I was also looking back through those records, and you know, we did the whole gamut of tests from the pituitary gland MRI to an adrenal gland test to make sure that those are working properly. Did all these hormone tests, and LH, FSH were low, and so was my estrogen. Estrogen was severely low, and we tried an estrogen patch for a while to see if that would fix things. Nothing seemed to work, so they put me on the pill. And I think I started the pill like the summer before my junior year of high school, so like when I was 16. And I hated being on it, not because it actually affected me really in any way. I'm a lucky person that didn't really have these ill side effects, but I just didn't like the stigma that I felt like it was attached to it. So I remember the first bleed I had on that, it was actually really awful. And I don't know if any other women have experienced this, but when I had my first bleed, I was super excited because I was like, oh
Of
my gosh,
course.
like I'm a functioning woman. This is awesome. But gross, now I have to deal with this. And then, so I went through the placebo week. And then on like the eighth, ninth day, didn't stop. 10th, 11th, 12th day didn't stop, and in fact was getting so heavy. And I was pretty alarmed. I was like, okay, like I know I haven't like I was like, am I just making up for like years of not having a period right now? Like what is going on? And we called the doctor and we're like, hey, this is like day 18. What's going on? And it's not stopping. And they were like, okay, so here's what you do. You take three of the pills in one night. And then the next night, you take two of the pills. And then the next night, you just continue. And that stopped it. So I don't know what was going on or what the science behind that is, but it happened. It helped.
To confirm, what pill was it?
I don't know. I know it was one
just
of
like
them.
An estrogen, like, pill or a progesterone pill.
I kind of think it was like a blend of the both of them. If I had like a list of brand names, I could probably pick it
kind
out
of
of
sounds
there.
Like you were suddenly producing estrogen and you weren't producing progesterone and nothing was stopping that from like clearing up. And then, because otherwise, why would you, this is, I mean, that's a whole other, like, because you're bleeding heavy the whole time relatively.
Oh yeah, it was awful,
because it's like, where's all this blood coming from?
I
what I
know.
mean
And that,
so
like, my brain was like, I must be making up for 3 years and never doing this before. This is so, but I don't
like,
think
no,
that's
not how that
found on
works.
anything. No.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I would have normal ones after that, while on the pill. And we went through a series of trials, like, let's come off the pill now. And then let's go back on it because you haven't done anything. And so let's come off of it. Had ovary ultrasounds, everything looked normal. So it was just a matter of like, okay, well, is this a thyroid induced problem? Like, you don't have PCOS, your weight is back to normal. Still kind of in the dark.
Y'all, we have been trying to record this for like 30 minutes. So here we go. Take 580. Hey, did you know that we support people with HA, low progesterone, anovulation, short luteal phases, and all of the types of challenges that come up with infertility?
Danny and I are practitioners that have helped hundreds of women beat HA, regain fertility, and get pregnant naturally.
Mm-hmm. We are here to break the status quo of spending tens of thousands of dollars on IVF treatments for women who have issues that can absolutely be solved naturally.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes. So we do this with our signature program that restores ovulation to regain healthy menstrual cycles. And if you're ready, get pregnant completely naturally.
Mm-hmm. On top of our one-on-one sessions, our fertility program even includes a styling session with Samantha Dawn, who is a body positive stylist. She's also our personal stylist.
Yes.
And an expert in helping you to dress your new and nourished body.
This is so important that we don't even need to convince you on how important this is. We want you to relearn how to nourish your body, claim your fertility, and feel confident in your clothes as your body changes.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be painful.
No, yeah, exactly right. It doesn't have to be painful. With a little bit of guidance and support, you can absolutely do this. So if getting your cycle back and if feeling good about the process, if getting pregnant naturally is something you want to do, if you don't want to spend tens of thousands of dollars on medical treatment for something that you don't have to, we have just the place for you to go. So go to thehasociety.com/coaching to learn more about who we are, what we do, and apply today.
Yeah, we looked forward to supporting you.
That was good. Do you like that one?
Yeah, okay. I do like that one. That one's way more us.
Yeah, boom, there you go.
And so I'm pretty sure when I was 17, like around the time of high school graduation, I'm pretty sure I was on the pill, and then we decided to go off. And I remember going off. And then May of 2017, I actually cycled, like, on my own. And that was,
yay,
like, another victory. I was like, oh my gosh, like, I can do it. Like, this is amazing. Because for the longest time, like, I was just diagnosed with primary amenorrhea. And, you know, the eating disorder likely was the cause. But it took a long time for me to even cycle. Even after recovering from eating disorder. So that was great. And then, literally a couple weeks later, my mom and I were blessed with the opportunity to go to Europe for a couple of weeks. She has some friends that live overseas, and we had some family that lived overseas. my mom actually used to live there in her 20s teaching school in Belgium. And so we got to take this really cool mother-daughter trip. And over the trip, crossed my heart, didn't try, but literally lost, I think, 5 pounds. It was a lot of walking, a lot of eating really different, weird food. And of course, we were staying in other people's homes. I can't necessarily just raid their cabinets for whatever I want. And, and since getting back home from that trip, never cycled again. It was, at the time, I didn't even, I don't know if I put two and two together, losing weight had done that. but I genuinely think it did. So I went to college. I think, I can't even remember at this point. I went on and off the pill so many times because I kept having the same conversation with doctors, which was, I don't have a period. And they say, okay, let's put you on birth control. And then I say, okay. And then I come back. And then I say, okay, so do I need to be having a period? Do I need this? And I remember specifically asking, is it dangerous if I don't have a period? And they were well, I guess not. And so I went off the pill and then I wouldn't have a period. So I was well, this is great. Kind of weird that I can't cycle. This is going to really stink when I want to have kids later. But for now, it's kind of cool not having a period and getting to do all the things I want to do without having to worry. And that all changed after I graduated college and I went to a gynecologist and, did labs or whatever. I think I had to get a pap smear, just awful. And she was like, hey, so your estrogen is really low. And she was like, I'm actually concerned about this because estrogen is really important for bone health. This was the first time I was hearing about that. And I was like, oh. And she was like, yeah, so let's go ahead and order a bone scan. And I was like, okay. And of course, the bone scan comes back and I have osteopenia. And that was kind of when I was like, oh no. So then she said, well, okay, so let's put you back on the pill because any of your body's natural estrogen, we need that to go to your bone health. And the fake estrogen will attribute to your cycle. So it's kind of like, it almost felt like we were biohacking with birth control.
Right. Yeah.
So we did that for a while. In the meantime, I had just started dating my now husband. So this was back in June of 2022. So I was 23 years old. Kind of did the birth control pill thing. My husband and I, we got engaged, did our engagement, and then got married. And in the meantime, I guess I really haven't been talking about my weight, but essentially from the time I got back to Europe, there was a period, there's probably a 20 pound fluctuation in there because my brain did eventually go back into the restriction mindset. Definitely not to high school level. but instead of maybe eating only 1,000 calories a day like I was in high school, I would eat 1,500 calories a day in college. so clearly, I'm not going to cycle because my weight is too low and I've also grown a little bit taller. So I need more weight probably than I needed in high school. I was just really frustrated and I felt even though my gynecologist was like, hey, estrogen's important for bone health, still no one knew why. And in fact, when weight gain was brought up, it was always in this well, we think it might help. And they would just throw an arbitrary number, well, maybe if you gained 10 pounds.
Yeah.
And
it's always 10 pounds.
It's always 10 pounds. Always 10 pounds. You're always just so close. And I've learned this about myself. If there's something that maybe I kind of don't want to do or is really hard, I just need someone to be very explicit with me and say, look, this is what you have. This is what you have to do. You must do it. You don't have any other option. And then I will do it. But when doctors are like, well, maybe you should, and this might help, this might not, like, my motivation to do the hard thing is very low. So I didn't really gain the weight, but didn't lose the weight. I actually kept, I mean, this is not a brag, but I had been really monitoring a number on the scale, right? And use that number to dictate, like, how much food I could eat that day, or if I was going out with some friends in the evening, I would prepare by, like, not eating a super big lunch or a super big breakfast or whatever. Then I'd say after my husband and I got married, I was still on birth control, and probably in December of 2023, I think we both kind of caught baby fever. We go to this Anglican church where, for some reason, just a lot of people in the congregation had babies, and we would just see the babies at church, and we're like, oh my gosh, they're so cute. And, you know, we just would get excited about starting our own family. And so I was like, okay, well, I want to come off the pill. I know I'm on the pill because of my bone health, but I really want to come off the pill. And honestly, I know that every single time I've come off the pill, I don't cycle, and we really need to start addressing this problem. And so I found, or actually, no, I learned that my gynecologist that I had been going to, she was retiring unexpectedly. So I was like, oh, crud, like, what do I do? And so I don't remember how I got affiliated or connected with this person. I think I reached out to my primary care doctor, but he referred me to a fertility specialist at one of the hospitals here in town. And he is kind of like this older guy, had been practicing for a really long time. And I just reached out to him and I was like, hey, this is what's going on. I haven't had a cycle for probably 6 or 7 years. And I mean, that's unmedicated, of course. And I'm really frustrated. I am not interested in doing in vitro. I am not interested in doing fertility drugs. I really just need someone to tell me what's going on, because I'm really frustrated and very sad. He actually contacted me, like, called me personally on the phone, like, the Saturday before my appointment, and was like, hi, I'm Dr. So-and-so. Just wanted to introduce myself and wanted to know if you have any questions before our appointment. And I was like, I have no questions, really, other than, like, I'm just telling you I'm very frustrated because no one has been able to help me. And he was like, he's like, well, I don't know if this is arrogant or not, but I'm usually pretty good at figuring out the problem. Okay. So I was like, okay, great. Thanks. I hope you're right. And so we met with him, my husband and I met with him, and I told him all my health history, including the eating disorder. I think the week before I had gotten some labs drawn, and he just looked at everything and he was like, all right, so here's what's going on. You probably have something called hypothalamic amenorrhea. Okay. And he was like, usually it's in a lot of athletes or people who had eating disorders. And it's essentially your hypothalamus has detected a lot of stress. Because of that, it is not going to do unnecessary things to that you should be doing, right? So this can affect your thermoregulation. It can affect your hair, which, side note, had been falling out off and on for 10 years. It's going to affect a lot of things, especially your reproductive system. Like, that's going to be the first to go. And so he was like, you probably need to get to, he told me a number. He's like, you need to get to this number. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay. So that was like the explicit, not sugar-coated answer that I needed.
Did the number shit like shock you, or was there a part of you that was like, meh, makes sense? Like, what was your reaction when he told you reality, or what he deemed reality?
When I was thinking about the number that I was, and we met with him June of this year, so June of 2024, I was like, okay. Like, the number, I feel like it was reasonable, but it was heavier than anything I'd ever weighed before, which is a little bit scary, but it was not a number that was so far out there that it was like alarm bells go off. It was just kind of like a reality that I was like, okay, like, I'm gonna do this. This is my goal. And I also asked him, because I was like, all right, so say I gain the weight, how long is it gonna take me for things to start working? And he was like, I'd probably give it a few months. So don't expect to hit a number and then all of a sudden magically bleed like the next day, right? Especially if you don't have any follicles at all, like antral follicles. If you don't have those take like a few months to develop before they can even potentially like be ovulated. So I was like, okay. So, in kind of a poetic way, that happened to fall on like the 10-year anniversary of being hospitalized. And so, I was like, all right, I'm done living in this hyper controlled way. So I just let go of a lot of control. I still would say I was dealing with a bit of orthorexia. And I just was kind of like, all right, just gonna let that go. So instead of packing the same lunch every day, I would just bring leftovers from dinner. Instead of eating the same breakfast every day, or if I ate the same breakfast every day, I'd always add something, add some sort of like cheese or meat, like lunch meat or like extra peanut butter, like anything to just sneak extra meaningful calories in, that could just make it a little bit easier. And so slowly but surely I gained the weight. And then I can happily say that I believe, end of August, I had my first bleed, which was incredible. So the process really, like, for me, it took about 2 to 3 months. And what's interesting is when I got my first bleed, it was probably precisely the weight that I was my senior year of high school when I got my first bleed, on my own, which is really interesting. And so, I've heard you guys talk on the podcast a lot about like, the second period is always the worst. And so while I didn't think it was going to be the worst, cause I was like, no, like I got my first bleed. I started binging a lot of the HA podcast to give myself motivation. I know. So I had been tracking my LH with strips. And I know that's not always the preferred method, but I actually told my husband, I was like, okay, I may go crazy if I don't have some sort of way to know what my body's doing.
It's a very helpful tool in the context of everything. Yeah. It just on its own, it doesn't do anything really helpful, but like when you're looking at other various data points and stuff, it's actually really helpful.
Yeah. So that was a saving grace, just being able to test. And when I saw my LH peak, I was like, oh my gosh, like this is happening. And then my luteal phase was like only 5 days, which was disappointing. But at the same time, I'm like, okay, but it's working.
Yeah.
Interestingly, my weight during my period had dropped a few pounds. And then my follicular phase was literally like 40 days. And so I've only had my second LH peak like 10 days ago. But it's encouraging because I haven't had a bleed yet. So I'm in like day 10 post-ovulation and I've gained more weight, more than I was at on my first bleed. And so I've really seen, I'm like, okay, like my body seems to be at this very like tenuous set point, and I really need to go much over that Like I need to increase because at least for now, it seems as if my body, if it goes past a certain point, then everything is just not working. So I would say I still have a lot of work to do, but I think, I don't know, like I could cry tears of joy knowing that like my body can function like it was meant to function. So that's kind of where I'm at right now, just waiting for a second bleed and hoping that, you know, the next cycle will be even more regular, and then hopefully so my body like fresh, will then be fresh. Healthy enough.
That second one can be hard.
It can.
Yeah, that's why I have a whole YouTube playlist for second periods. That's just like dedicated to like the one after the first one.
Right. Yeah.
You'll be fine. A 5-day luteal phase is great. Expectation that it should be more than that is unfair. Hopefully linear progress is underway for you. And I mean, this, it sounds like you've been, honestly, when people have that background, that history that you have, you just don't really want to go back. You're just like, I'm not interested in messing around. There's two types of people, and people who like didn't hit rock bottom enough to get the first period. And will that, so like that was me, and we'll play the how low can I go game. We'll play games with that second period because like, well, I don't have a chain more. But it, you know, while tendencies that we had in the past don't ever fully go away, like the suggestion is always in the back of your mind to like do the behavior. You just get so much stronger and you have clarity and you know what's going on. And that's all you need to do is just be curious about, am I doing actions that are in alignment with my goal or not? Yes or no?
And it really has been like a really big like mental weight that has been lifted, which is like really amazing. It's very nice to just get to be carefree, like how a lot of people get to be naturally, right? Like I don't know what it is about like why I developed the habits that I did in high school. One could speculate on anything, right? But I was never
love that you opened early with core memories, which is like either knowingly or unknowingly, you're like, here are some things that happened in high school. They are called formative years for a reason. And absolutely the perfect concoction of all of those things happening the way that they did screwed up. I bet you could interview other girls you went to school with now and they'd be like, you know, that didn't have no effect on me. So all it takes is the right personality to be in that environment. And the thing is, that environment is not that hard to find. So those core memories are actually really important for people to be able to identify, to make sense of why shit happened the way it did. And, you know, will you know 100% hands down exactly all the little micro things that happened? No. But those are really good examples of like, yeah, it makes sense that I developed that belief system because I had a you had a blank canvas. And then someone came in and was like, so you need to assess every inch of yourself. Right now. And every inch of what you do and all of your behaviors. And then it's just like bing, bang, boom. Some people get wired immediately. And then some people have, you know, not so much, so they don't get as messed up by it. And so there's just like two types of people, but I'm sure it's very helpful for you to be able to look back a little bit and be like, that wasn't my fault. Cool. This was a great story. But yeah, thank you so much. You will have to keep me updated on how things go. with the future I periods.
Will. Yes.
Best of luck. You never know.
Thank you.
You know, you never know how smooth or how rough things will go.
All right.
But yeah, just listen to your inner voice. Know yeah. that you know what to do, that you've been there before, and that not committing to the process that you need to do only keeps you stuck. Like, you know that.
Yeah.
This was really cool. For sure. It was great to meet you and hear your story. And I really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing with people. And I know absolutely that your story has helped other people just be like, oh, fine. She's right.
Yeah. I hope so.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you for...
That's all it is.
Thank you for being willing to interview a complete stranger.
I love it. It's a great way to end our Friday.
Yeah,
I hope you have an awesome weekend, and everyone listening to this on a Wednesday, I hope you're having a great Wednesday, and we'll talk to you guys later. Bye.
Bye.
Hey there, it's me, Danny, and I want to tell you about Temp Drop as a fertility awareness method tracking option. So many of you guys know that we actually recommend the fertility awareness method both as you're going through recovery and 100% after you have gotten some cycles back and you're starting to move forward for the rest of your reproductive years. So Temp Drop itself is a wearable fertility monitor and we love it. It's a wearable device, so you put it around your arm and you can use that instead of taking your temperature manually with a thermometer each morning. So I'm personally a big fan of the manual tracking. All of us at the HA Society are, and that's the method that we use, you know, just using a good old thermometer. We use that with our clients because it's the best way to use it as a diagnostic tool, as a practitioner. And it's also the best way to ensure if you're trying to avoid pregnancy that you don't get pregnant. However, manual temping for many reasons is just not always an option. When you're in the middle of recovery, again, we do recommend manual temping, but once you're cycling, the Temp Drop is actually a really great hack. So it gives you basically everything you need to effortlessly track your fertility status, like where you are in your monthly cycle. So you wear the Temp Drop sensor while you're sleeping for accurate basal body temperature readings without the stress of early morning wake-ups. So I personally love this because with a toddler, my wake-up times are all over the place and the occasional sleep disruptions make using an oral thermometer a lot more difficult. So Temp Drop's accompanying charting app enables you to track an array of symptoms alongside your basal body temperature. This includes tracking your cervical mucus if you've been using OPKs, and then it also gives you sleep insights too. So you can combine these fertility signs all in one place, and that will help you identify your fertile window, confirm ovulation, plan for your period, and if you're trying to get pregnant, you know, identify whether or not you are pregnant. So whether you're trying to conceive or avoiding pregnancy, or you want to chart for health reasons like HA recovery, making sure your cycle's not slipping back in the HA direction, Temp Drop makes fertility awareness accessible to all women, even if you don't have regular cycles or sleeping patterns. So track your ovulation in real time with the Temp Drop, and we are lucky enough to have a 15% off code. So if you go to their website, they're usually having a sale, but you can stack this code on top of the existing code. So just go to tempdrop.thehasociety.com and use the code AFHASociety. I think too, if you just go to tempdrop.com and use AFHASociety at the checkout, that will work too. So happy temping and good luck. This episode is brought to you by Grassland Nutrition Beef Liver Capsules. Did you know that in terms of nutrient density, beef liver actually blows vegetables and fruits out of the water? If you're a client of mine, you have already been instructed to eat beef liver either fresh or in capsule form. I recommend it for anyone and everyone who is, of course, dealing with amenorrhea and fertility challenges out there, but I may even recommend it for just everyone in general. Get your husbands on it, get your partners on it. If you have a history of HA and add on top of that maybe history of the pill, maybe you've been pregnant before, you know, through treatments or other, like you've just, your body's been through anything, you know, you're absolutely 100% dealing with a nutrient deficiency of some kind. And while it's true that testing is going to be the best way to understand those exact deficiencies, eating nutrient-dense, real food is going to be one of the most important next steps that you take with or without testing. So I've been using and recommending Grassland Nutrition Beef Liver Capsules for years now. And the capsule form makes it so easy to get your liver in every day. And I appreciate the transparency of this product in particular above others. So in case you're wondering, it's completely natural. This is freeze-dried beef liver in capsules. It's organic, it's made from Australian beef, and my favorite of their products is the liver with kelp because of the iodine from the kelp, which is important for overall thyroid function, which is often low in women with underperforming hormones. So rather than eat seaweed snacks every day, I get to take this beef liver with the kelp for my iodine. So if you're recovering or working on a fertility journey right now, do not skimp the nutrient rich source of beef liver. Get 10% off your order with the HA Society and support your favorite podcast along the way. They ship to most countries, so you should be covered. Just go to grasslandnutrition.net and use HA Society, just HA Society, at the checkout for the 10% off. That's grasslandnutrition.net with the code HA Society. Thank you so much for listening today, guys. Please subscribe to the podcast, and if you could head to iTunes specifically and leave a rating or review, that would help so much because it makes it easier for other people with HA who are Googling around to find the podcast really easily. So if you do that, you're doing a service to all of the women.